Gee, I feel like I'm riding a big crest of musical waves, surfing out there on the big orchestral prairie.
Yes, this is blender music.
And we have a blender topic.
Please, let's hear. I'm a blend.
History can be a very rewarding discipline, especially when the facts that relate to historical events can be skewed and twisted to fit one's own designs, no matter how foul or repugnant they may be. We learn history through many sources, from books written in the language of our ancestors, by word of mouth uttered in the dialect of our progeny, through antediluvian advertising palaver, in computer journals of lie detection monitors and other polygraphic machinery, from the scent records of plasma fish, and also through myriad mass communication attempts by the extraterrestrials. History tells us many things, most of which, in hindsight, are apocryphal. It tells us, for example, that 403 years ago today, Giuseppe Orlando, royal taverner to the faux king of Seville, a Spanish city shaped not unlike a Cadillac, found that an olive could be flash pickled by soaking it in a mixture of whiskey and vermouth for 60 minutes, a period of time now known as a cocktail hour.
Ooh, history.
Yeah. The discovery was forgotten until 1949, when members of the Manhattan Project, themselves apocryphal subject matter of a previous Squintro, stumbled onto Orlando's bartending notes, duplicated the process, then reaped an atomic windfall by accidentally dropping a jigger of uranium-235 into the shot glass and inaugurating rapid transit to Cleveland. Orlando, meanwhile, again, this is all according to history.
According to history.
Met a perspicacious woman named Monrovia Saltine, who, had she not spontaneously appeared 3,700 years earlier during the waning hours of the Age of Pluperfectory, would have had to have been invented after the fact and then inserted into historical context. Monrovia, profiting from a knowledge that only existing in a parallel universe can provide, introduced Orlando to the rodeo. While the elderly taverner fared poorly in the bareback, bronc riding, and bulldogging events, he excelled in the calf roping competition. From the moment the beast was released into the arena, which in this case was a huge storage room of a castanet manufacturer, Orlando was on his horse galloping in hot pursuit, a thick rope of mohair coiled in his free hand. As soon as the calf crashed into the shelving unit at the far end of the room, the blithe barkeep flung the lariat over the calf's dazed head, flipped the animal onto its hind shell, and soldered its cloven hooves together, all in record time. And it was not a fluke. Time and again, Orlando mounted his elastic steed, urged it forward as the calf slid down the chute into the arena, and launched his lariat the moment the animal collided with the shelving unit. Record after record, as well as untold thousands of boxed castanets, fell that day, 403 afternoons ago this very afternoon. Heady from his success, and also intoxicating refreshment, Giuseppe saddled up for one final challenge, the bull riding event.
Say bull riding?
Not writing as in calligraphy, but riding.
I did my share of bull riding throughout the years. riding.
Riding.
See, yes,
As listeners to this show know, bull riding for profit is not an activity encouraged by Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, this portion of the 108th episode of which has unintentionally refuted the interference principle, an historical allegory of obscure corpuscular presentations of different distance values which accommodate the physiology of vision in the rugby school, and which now returns your radio to a semblance of regular programming. In the event, a rider must hold on to a rope that circles the webbed belly of a ferocious Brahma bull and stay aboard for 8 seconds. You can just stick that in any time you want.
That's the Brahma bull music now?
Yeah, it could be.
We need it now.
Sure.
Say the last sentence again.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the event, a rider must hold on to a rope that circles the webbed belly of a ferocious Brahma bull and stay aboard for 8 seconds. No need to fade the other. I think they go well together.
Is that 8 seconds?
Was. Orlando, alas, stayed on for only 7 seconds. During the critical 8 seconds, the weighty bull was atop Orlando, forcing eviscera out of every available orifice. But in tribute to his fine ropesmanship earlier in the day, rodeo officials posthumously proclaimed him Orlando the Lasso, or Le Flambeau, La Orlandia. Historical allusions and other bits pervade much of what we hear and do on this program, and here to pervade much of the next hour 50, hour 49, is WGDR's own Brahma intoxicant, Calvo.
Right. Well, enough of that.
Enough of what?
Enough of the intrusion of the brave bulls into the middle of that blending there.
Yes.
Yes. We should blend rather than intrude. How about this way?
That way they conclude at about the same time.
Ah, perhaps. This is the music of Kaya Sarajaho, Verblendungen.
See?
That's it. That's why we're blending. And it's for tape and orchestra, and that indicates that today's show is going to have a lot less of the kind of popish energy that we've had in the past month.
This is pretty poppy, I think.
Well, perhaps a little. We've heard music of Nick Ditkovsky and John Oswald in the past 4 weeks, so we're going to have Elma Miller as our guest today, and she is anything but rock and roll.
No, but she has a perky, poppy quality to her.
She does that. Anyway, let's listen to the last 2 minutes and some of their blending, and we'll be back to harangue some more. Or blending in for orchestra and tape by Kaya Sarriaho. That was the Avanti Chamber Orchestra. Avanti.
Not Avanti Gardi.
With Jukka-Pekka Sarasti, conductor. And the tape was realized in the Experimental Music Studios in Helsinki.
We should have one show dedicated to Kaya's pop. Phase.
Her pop phase, you know, when she was at Mills College with the Beach with the Beecher Boys there, the
Harriet Beecher Boys,
Harriet Beecher Boys, who were stowing their what do you call those boards that they go on, those wave things?
College boards.
Ah, good, very good, very good.
So how long has Mills not been a women's college?
I didn't know that it was.
It is listed as in my 1960 American. No, Random House Dictionary as a women's college.
Interesting. Well, we will be playing some music by the head of the Mills Mafia in just a few minutes, and that's
good.
Maggie Payne. I have it sitting right here. We're going to listen to two pieces, one by Peter Van Riper in Music for Spaces, and the other one from Maggie Payne called Resonant Places. I thought that the title rhyme would be nice, so we'll do two pieces together. These are from two thoughtful post-hippiedom quasi-New Age electronics.
Yes, right.
One from the East Coast, Peter Van Riper, and one from the West, Maggie Payne. So here we have from Music for Spaces, Color Fields, followed by, or not all of it, which will blend into Resonant Places by Maggie Payne. And we'll be back in about 10. Here we are with the music of Peter Van Riper.
10 what?
10.
Oh, just 10.
10. It's Celsius.
Oh. Thank you.
There you have it. Color Fields by Peter Van Riper, finishing up with Resonant Places by Maggie Payne, head of that Mills Mafia.
Right. Now, didn't you want some nice seagulls at the end of that last tune and some ocean waves thrusting themselves like onto the sandy beach and little children with kites running
kites.
Around?
Yes, it's the kite part that's the most important.
Of course.
I heard those kites. Resonant, but yeah. Yes, that's that the California and then the New Yorker, both. And I bet you couldn't tell where that transition was, except you were watching my hand on the knobs.
Yep, but it was quite a smooth transit.
Smooth pieces for smooth transitions. It is the Calvos and Damien New Music Bazaar on WGDR, the playing field.
Soon to have more power at its disposal than
more power than it deserves.
More than many people will know what to do with, but we won't.
We'll certainly know what to do with it. I think we may have to celebrate by playing Christopher Koenigsberg's Brains, Rat's Nest, for our first piece. I think we need a new opening when we get the new transmitter, or should we? Actually, we're pretty consistent. Nice opening.
When we start getting cash to roll in regularly, then I think we should consider a new opening.
Yeah, don't want to waste tape.
Right. I think that if you do want to do Brains, we could do it stereo, you know, as you played She Was a Visitor some weeks ago with two recordings.
Oh, right.
We have several Brainses.
We could do that. What a cool idea.
Cool is not the adjective that comes immediately to mind.
An exciting idea. What a way to gather our moss.
Yes.
Elma Miller. You like to set the scene.
We were amble-cotted.
That's right, we were.
She came in flapping a coat, I believe.
Yes, she was flapping. Yes, she flapped throughout.
She did. I think everything else is explanatory.
I think so. It has to do with eggs.
Right. And did it come before Elma, or did Elma precede the egg?
I think we explain.
Good.
Shall we go to Toronto?
Please.
Here we are. Toronto, just after a snowstorm in early 1997.
Another day.
Another victim. Another amok. Another udok.
We did have some snacks earlier in the day.
Yes.
The day this is, and they were of either Belgian, Estonian, or Norwegian extraction, I believe.
They were called eggs amblecote. What do you suppose that extraction is?
I know what an amble is, but I'm not sure of what the coating was that pervaded the essence of egg.
Essence of egg.
Right.
And they were on muffins.
So you maintain. I don't. I think they were of extraterrestrial origin, and I don't know what they were.
Egg saucers.
Cool. Yes.
We are here on our second day in the Amblecote Bed and Breakfast. Our guest is Elma Miller, the formerly Canadian, now Estonian-Canadian composer.
Ambling right along.
Ambling in here. And
what brings you here to Estonia?
The political situation here is a lot better than it used to be. It's independent now.
Yes. Does that mean you're an independent Estonian, or do you have ties to other ethnic groups?
Oh, you mean whether I'm mixed?
We're mixed entirely, by one.
Well, actually, that's an interesting question. It's a small country. My parents all ended up being from the same little island off the coast of Estonia, from Saaremaa. And as far back as I can tell, according to them, they're all from the same island. So that's now, since I married a mainlander, it's considered a mixed marriage.
Ooh.
So it's for a small country of 1.5 million. This is like half the size of Toronto or less. That is possible. And it's what is really incredible. When just before my grandmother died, we were going to make a tape of her voice. Apparently, my husband never told me that he never could understand the version of Estonia that she and I spoke together. For the longest time, he was very politely sitting in the room because men used to do that, and he had the best spot. He wasn't expected to say anything. Whereas we gabbed on, and for 2 hours she would do most of the talking. And he never understood. I was completely amazed when she died, when he said that, you know, I never really did understand her. I thought maybe it was he couldn't understand her, or he couldn't understand her, the language. And yeah, it's a very heavy dialect. People who come here from Estonia tell me that I have preserved such an old dialect because, of course, the immigrants here, they had no interreaction with any of the people in Estonia, preserved a really ancient kind of a dialect, which I still have. And it's as if here's this woman under 100 years old, me, stepping out of a museum and actually talking like they can't believe it. It's really... I was so embarrassed that I stopped talking Estonian, you know, because it's funny.
It's confounding to me, because the number of dialects in small geographical areas, particularly in Europe, just amazing to me. And here we are in this vast continent, and you have to go from one end to the other, and from the most rural town imaginable, and you still have no trouble understanding.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, in Hungary it's just like that. I think your background
maybe
could be, yeah, the Ungro-Finn connection. But the starting off with Estonian is a red herring in my case. The Canadian scene when I was in university in the mid 70s was definitely, you were a Canadian, I was a Canadian. My name is definitely Canadian, except for the first part, Elma. That sounds like a perfectly normal 90-year-old name, right, you know. Living in an old folks' home, Elma, you know.
Right,
and
Elma.
And it's perfectly a typical name. And but the rise of the multiculturalism, the ethnicity of people, this was a Canadian policy that was actually started in the Ukrainians in the middle part of Canada, where they had no country left. So they wanted to maintain their heritage in Canada. Now, other countries that had perfectly their own countries intact and had already a growing identity didn't really need the secondary support, but jumped on the bandwagon. And Canadian cultural policy at the time didn't realize for about 20 years down the road what would actually happen. And so in this last 20 years, the Canadian multiculturalism has risen to a point where it's become, even if you read today in the Globe and Mail, a cultural issue in cabinet as to now what do we do with it? Do we now dismantle it? Because even the Greeks on Danforth, with all the Greek names, they live out of Toronto and they can't read Greek anymore, for instance, as an example. But in that period of time, this is where I was going through university, and after that, the years following, ethnicity was in. So even people were digging in their background, oh, I'm Scots, or I have a French background, German, anything. They just grabbed at straws. So I didn't have far to go. I thought, okay, I guess I'm Estonian. And many people didn't know. Well, they knew I had a funny accent.
Well, but you didn't, you know. It didn't seem to carry through. You didn't find the Estonian composers, folks that you necessarily wanted to emulate based on their music and your music.
Oh, none at all. I mean, so I liked Arvo Pärt's early works. When I met him, he was really into himself. He changed styles. All the stuff that Niemi Järvi and Arvo Pärt could do now, I mean, they would have been fine for the communists. You know, they wouldn't have argued. They wouldn't have had to have boycotts or anything like that. And I didn't know much about the Estonians there. I had old Melodia recordings. You know, everyone's gone through that at the library, you know, where we have, I think, Gurdar Sink or Agurat, Esther Megi. They were strangers. They're Estonians. I've never been there, still haven't been there. To me, it's a foreign country as far as I'm concerned. And the first Estonian composer I really heard was Arvo Pärt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, the Estonian that we have here locally is Udo Kasemets, who lived in Hamilton at the time. So
Well, you know, we met you on the internet, and so there's this sort of Hollywood-like picture that you have there, you know, with the head tilted to one side, and the name Elma Miller. And
everybody liked that picture, so that's why I scanned it in.
And, you know, until we started seeing the connection in the names of the pieces and the and references, we had no idea, and that's why I say, what is this connection?
So
now we have the accent, and here you are.
Well, yeah, the internet is really amazing. Those small countries, all of the satellite countries of the Soviet Union and the Baltics generally, boy, are they ever connected.
They sure are.
Yeah, look at the homepage of Mari L, for instance. It has every bell and whistle you can imagine. Blinking lights, new, scrolling, color. I mean, everything. I was now people know where it is. Or what it is.
Yeah.
Or that it even exists.
That it even exists, right.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's get to your music.
Oh, yeah.
Let's hear about it.
What do you want to know?
Everything. We want to know everything. We want to know how you get these performances, and we want to know why you write the way you do, and all of those questions. And
what's your favorite note?
And what? Yes, yeah, certainly that.
Only one?
Your favorite.
You can line them up in order, though, actually. You can put, you know, select your top three.
Jeez. Well, I like E.
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 Yes. Estonia.
Oh, no, it was because when I was writing in an apartment, the humidifier was on, and it ended up showing up in my pieces. And when someone says, I guess it's the tonal center is E. And I thought, why would you say that? I mean, it's completely 12 tones. And they said, no. If you look at the score, you know, your tonal center definitely is E. And I, so I went back and actually looked at the score completely in an analytical, objective point of view. this fallacy exists. And sure enough, when the double bass came in, it always came in on an E. So that's why I'm assuming E. And then as I moved out of that place, it became kind of random till an A came along, and then it was a C. I think in the most recent work, I'd say I decided to be nice and write a nice, more tonal sounding work, something more melodious, and I actually gravitated to the middle of the keyboard, C, in the orchestra, sort of more winds in that area. So there you have my top three.
See, you have the question answered, and you didn't expect an answer.
I hope for an answer. We just haven't had an answer in the past.
Really?
So thank you.
Oh, well.
Of course, I haven't asked the question.
They're not
before.
Entirely lying, are they?
No, never. Well, let's talk about vocal music. Let's start with vocal music. We have a reason to ask that question. Shall we play something first?
Sure. Do you something of Elma's or someone else's?
I think something of Elma's.
Oh, very convenient because
yes.
She's here.
She's here.
Good idea.
What would you choose among your vocal pieces to play first?
Well, it's odd that you should ask that right now because I just had a piece done in January in Ottawa where the critic... this is on my homepage, by the way, if I don't get it right. A critic called it, because three women were singing, this is Udakas M. Itz, he thought it was a coffee klatch. You know, it was cleverly manipulated and structured. But 3 months earlier, in Kitchener, it was done by three men. And the critic said it was urban, powerful, masculine. You know, and I... It was the first time I'd ever heard it with three men. And, I thought that was interesting. But the time before that in Montreal, it was done by a mixed group and where they thought it was Estonian rap. So
it's good to have critics to tell you
what your piece is about. Know.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, therefore, I pick that piece and see what your listeners' feedback is.
Well, let them
feedback?
Call.
Put your feedback.
Put your feedback. Udakas M. Itz by Elma Miller. Here it is.
Potato X! Potato X!
Mask.
With phone calls during that performance. Udak Asam Etz.
Barely listened to the piece because of all the
It's music by Elma Miller. Well, and what do you think about it? What's your take on your own piece? This is a terrible question to ask.
Oh, it is a hard piece, but I brought the score with me. So you can see that in the first performance was done with a friend of mine, and another Estonian from the audience, because I thought that would be neat, and me. I never did ask the person whether he could read music. I figured that he could wing it and it would be all right. Because it's written actually with that in mind. You can open this piece in a bar and do it. And that's exactly the way it's always been staged. You know, it's using the name Udo Kazemets and concocting 328 or so words from his name.
Did you do that by hand, or did you use a program to?
I did it by hand.
You did
I
that.
I just sat down and over dinner and breakfast the next day, just tried to figure out all the Estonian words. I was hoping that I'd be inventing real words, and I double checked in a dictionary, and those are all real words. It's an old language. You can do amazing things with it. And, of course, it's all nonsense. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. I just used it because I wanted people to sing or dramatize in a language that they couldn't understand and yet do something dramatic. So that was the challenge.
They didn't have any preconceptions about what the words meant that way?
No, they asked. Uh-huh. And I gave them some hints, like the last word, "ots" means end. And that's, there's no T in Utokase. There's no O in Udo Kazemets. Udo. No, there is an O. No, that's a legitimate. There was one word in there that was not a legitimate word. Someone out of the audience came and said, you know, that's not in that group. And I thought, so what? So what? You know, does it matter?
Of to all that the person, words. Apparently.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, right. And she was like, and Mrs. Lincoln asked for the play, did you like it? Other than that, you know, it's a moot point. Who cares? But it was interesting because, especially when they didn't understand, and they followed the instructions in the score, they're going to do it, whatever. And that's why I like that piece. And I think that's why it gets performed a lot, I think. It's weird.
How many performances has it had?
Geez, I'd say it's upwards of 20.
Really? Wow. That's very good.
That's shocking. Yeah, when I look back at performances and just trying to look at the life of the piece, it has had an amazing amount of performances.
Has it been performed in Estonia?
No.
Do you know any, could you have it done there?
Well, I've sent several scores, but I guess they don't know what to do with it.
They have to fly you over as a consultant.
That would be nice. I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind. Yeah, it's a good idea. Well, of course I thought of that.
So how do you get performances of? I mean, do people come to you and say, we heard that piece, we'd love to do it?
Well, in the case of that piece, they go to the Canadian Music Centre.
Uh-huh.
And they just look at it. It's usually by word of mouth or friends, or usually in programming. We need a kind of a short, different piece that's a bit spunky, and what do you suggest? I said, well, there is this one piece, and I think you might find it interesting, and that's what they tell me. And then they email me saying, we found your piece in the library. We'll be playing it. We're going to give it a dramatization. I hope you don't mind. I said, well, no. Oh. Why? What did you have in mind? Well, and they all think they're all very unique in this. This is what I find interesting. We're going to do it as if it's in a bar with three people having an argument. I said, well, that's great, because there's no indication in the score. None at all. Mm. I say nothing about it. And people end up doing that. And I'm continually pleased, of course, and they always apologize. Even the most recent performance from Ottawa, they called and wanted to make sure I wouldn't mind, which is very nice. But of course I wouldn't mind. Play it. I don't care. Get three kids to do it. But it was interesting that they would always pick that venue, a bar, and three people having a beer or wine and having an argument or a discussion. And that's exactly the way I realized that piece.
Let's go to another one. Let's go to a controversial one.
Very well.
Let's go to Jabberwocky.
Oh, that, yeah. Jabberwocky. When did I write that?
1980.
Yeah, you guys really did do your homework.
Oh, you did on Jabberwocky.
Yeah, the Jabberwocky, I sent... next year, of course, you know that this is the 100th anniversary of Lewis Carroll. And Jabberwocky was one of these pieces. I guess I really should say that my very first composition teacher and one of my very first pieces under a legitimate teacher was a voice piece. And I had to do it myself. I couldn't find anybody else. And I'd say that in the aesthetic of that and continuing my eccentricity kind of theme, I was always considered odd or eccentric. I wrote Jabberwocky, and I wanted to put all the borogoves and all the curly cues into the score, so when I did this score, I would rather not ever spend the time doing this in the computer. This was a kind of a score that it would just have fun showing off my pen technique, showing off what the piano can do, and having a terrific gas in the voice parts where you could act it out and really just ham it up and have no worry about the piece falling apart. And that's the way they do it.
Well, the reason, I'll tell you, we had an instant reaction to the piece and said, take it off, we hate this piece.
Oh, good.
We said, oh, we've heard that. It's been done. I never want to hear a voice do that kind of thing again. Take it off. And I had that reaction. And when we were coming up here, I said, David, when you listen, did you listen to the Alan Miller tape? Yes. I hated that guy.
Isn't that funny?
And then we spoke to another composer, and then they said, oh, who else are you interviewing? We didn't. Oh, are you going to do that Jabberwocky?
Yeah, well, kids in the audience, when they hear this, it depends on who does it, but usually if it's a person who's very dramatic, goes into the audience, they don't know what to do. It they scream, they laugh, they don't know it's me in the audience. I might be laughing too, and it gets always a tremendously broad response from the audience, very positive. Or they hate it. It's interesting. They think, oh, God, well, Elma hasn't changed. And or they love it. And that's the way it was at U of T. I remember that when I went through school, the same thing. It was, they always identified my work, and then after that, let's talk about some of the others. It was, if you could tell them apart, many of the composers are so similar sounding, but not me. And that's why I wouldn't be surprised that you get some interesting comments and strong comments.
Strong comments.
Time for our audience to hear as well.
Yes, now that we have given them no prejudice whatsoever
in
listening
all.
To music by our guest Elma Miller. This is Jabberwocky, and the performer?
Now, I believe I sent you the Amy Doolittle and Catriona. I forgot her last name.
Good enough.
Right.
Music by Elma or Jabberwocky.
the boroughs and the Mourad. Out! Great!
once again flooded with phone calls.
Get this off the air.
Many of which I made myself.
Yes, oh, I wasn't talking about the outgoing ones. They won't come and get you. They won't save you.
Canadians asking for the weather.
Okay, well, let's go to just how you compose in general, because it's such a variety. We have heard a half dozen pieces. Every one is unlike another one. How is that? Why is that?
Actually, if you analyze and go through them in detail, there's a paper being written about my music, and there is a certain aesthetic that goes through it. There's a line. And it's the sort of, I guess it's the wicked sense of humor, but it's there is a certain type of language which I use in my music, which makes it pretty much identifiable as my music. Although I find that hard to imagine. I don't analyze my own works. Mm. I just go on to the next one. But I'm inspired by many things. I go to the museum. I'm a member of the art gallery, and I enjoy certain favorite artists. I'll be going to the Munch show, which will be here in Art Gallery of Ontario, and if there's a new exhibit of Chinese tomb findings, I'll be there. I'm just interested from a wide background. I read archaeology in texts, where you get my Margarita and Guisque based on the snake and the pearl discoveries in Bahrain. My background is very varied and mixed. I read a lot of things and poetry, and I broaden my inspiration base by also not living in Toronto.
Okay.
There's interesting. Or Hamilton, which is apart from the Toronto scene, or do you mean private?
Yeah, pretty well. Yeah, it is quite apart. There's no orchestra, no symphony series, no opera, no music almost of any kind in Burlington. It's a bedroom community. Hamilton, well, they celebrated 100 years and the, or 150, sesquicentennial of Hamilton. And the orchestra died after 112 years, you know. And so this year, in fact, this Saturday was the revival of the new Hamilton Orchestra. And there were no Canadian composers on there, and I didn't go.
Oh.
So it's that's the community I'm coming out of. Sports,
donuts.
Hockey,
we understand
donuts.
Donuts are very big.
Very big. And that mentality. I mean, they'll go down and spend thousands of dollars on a franchise for sports, but they don't see their cultural background there in the arts. They have a wonderful art gallery in Hamilton. And that is not considered important in the political scene. And unfortunately, for the audience, I don't know where they stand. They packed Hamilton Place. Mm. And if you read the interview on the review on the internet from Hugh Fraser at The Spectator, it was just packed to the rafters in a program which I thought was very boring.
And they played?
Oh, Prokofiev's Classic Symphony.
Oh, yeah.
Something by Mozart with Angela Hewitt playing, Haydn's Symphony, and Siegfried's Idyll.
All right.
Gives you a picture,
yes,
right?
Yes, sir. Nice and sweet.
And it's great. You know, people like it, I suppose. The reviewer was very careful not to say how they played or whether it was good or bad. It was just a wonderful time. Everybody loved it. We were great, wonderful, great. Go, gang, go! And if they had a Canadian work on there, I don't know what the critic would do, but it would have been nice, I think. It would have been really nice to have. There's so many Canadian works that could have been put on there. Anything by Godfrey Rideout. And Murray Schafer, of course, you know, you'll gag at this, but some Murray Schafer, I think, would be just perfect with all the dramatic background. Mm-hmm. People like a narrative, mm-hmm. and they latch on to that, so that would have been perfect. Swallowing Glick, they used to always play his music in Hamilton. Would have been anything by the guy, anything at all. could have even been a token work, a short work, but still missing from the program. So it's, I'm standing behind the Canadian composers, and I didn't go. Not that anybody missed me. But I have this point of view, and I firmly believe that, and that's the background on which I come from. I feel like I'm a voice in the wilderness.
Well, you know, it's not untypical, though. I mean, certainly in the States it's worse than here, generally. Where we are in Vermont, the chances of a Vermont composer being in the Vermont Symphony's repertoire is almost non-existent.
Is that right?
They do once a year. They will consider doing a piece by a Vermont composer, but lately it's been people who come to summer in Vermont and are, you know, film composers or composers from other places who do fairly easy stuff and nice light curtain raiser and off with the composer.
That's right, yeah.
And well, on to the Brahms.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, then you get Symphony Hamilton, who puts on a work, has the nerve to. Community Orchestra puts on a work by Paul Hoffert. He's the head of the Ontario Arts Council. Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony. I don't know how they're going to do that.
Yum.
Take my Lanta before you go. And I can't remember what else was on the program, but that's interesting, at least. I'd go. And I will go. It's curious. Anyway, I'd like to hear what Paul does with this violin. And it would be interesting. But it's a contradiction. The established orchestra, or the newly established orchestra, should at least, I'd say, give a nod to the people who actually live here, or used to live here. Many of them are dead. Play dead composers. That's fine. I don't mind.
Wait, play dead composers. Yeah. Is that a command? Play dead composers.
Play dead composers.
And here you are. You are not a dead composer. We have much more music of yours to listen to.
Yes.
Shall we turn to something orchestral, since you are in the orchestral mode?
Okay.
Mood.
Name the piece.
In 10 seconds or fewer?
Yeah, tell me all you know. You've got 10 seconds.
Something with animals. Something bigger than a bread box. Something that is something common around the house you see every day.
An omnivore, yeah. Keep
something
going.
Made of stone.
Yeah.
Stone. That, Estonia.
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 Estonian in light. Light in Estonia.
Quick. Look. No.
Not another
I
accordion.
Can't do it. No.
Oh,
no,
God.
We give up.
But we'll play that one.
To light one candle.
All right. That's one, zero.
When all around us is going completely bonkers. Yes. It was just written before the independence of Estonia. And a big article in the New York Times where Marju Lauristin, I think she was the UN representative for Estonia, had indicated that this one chance the Estonians have is the equivalent of the to light one candle, and she was referring back, of course, as you well know, in 1343, the UDMS, St. George's Uprising, which is now called St. George's Day. I can't remember, in April sometime, you would probably... I don't remember my history. April the 23rd, give or take a week. And that's what she was referring to. The history of that country is so broad. And so they had this chant in the late 80s of independence. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to write one Estonian, just one Estonian, and this is going to be the only Estonian inspired, this will be it. And it was also written for the 70th anniversary of the Tallinn Conservatory, so I figure I should try to be Estonian. And I just, in the garbage of my brain childhood, DDs all cropped up around the campfire. We used to sing them. And so they're all in there.
Let's hear it after that. To light one candle. Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Carry
Music
on.
By Alma Miller.
Alas, the candle is temporarily extinguished.
Guttering, is it?
Guttering, because the actual music was not forwarded to us in time for the program today after all these months. So we will go ahead and play that next week after we get on the phone with Elma and wring it out of her.
Yep.
And in its place, we'll hear
Jabberwocky again.
No, a piece with the Canadian Contemporary Music Workshop that she composed for them called Margarita Anguisk. This is from the early 1980s, and it is on an EP.
Thank you.
Margarita Anguis. I think she pronounced it Margarita Anguscu when she mentioned it in the interview. So I'm not sure.
Did she refer to this later in the interview and replay it again?
No, she just passed by at one point, mentioned it, and I think she said Margarita Anguscu. Anyway, that's music by Elma Miller. She was a jolly sort. Her music is so much more serious than
it
she
is,
seems to
yes.
be.
It is, yes. I still look for the frivolity in Jabberwocky. I guess I can't get past the...
Can't get past the voices? The voices! Why can't you get past the voices?
I don't know. I guess I'm just not broad-minded enough.
Must be. Not jabberwocked up. Well, okay. New releases. We have new compositions and new releases and a best of the bazaar at the top of the hour.
Yeah, well, let's hear what you have from this new guy.
We have, three new CDs and a tape.
You should mention that Elma will continue next week, will she not?
Absolutely, yes. The second half of our interview with Elma, during which we will also hear some correct music. We'll try to really get the correct To Light One Small Candle by next week, and as well as Sinderis's 12 and Circumstantial Evidence.
Didn't the Doors do a cover of that? Come on, baby, light my small candle.
Small candle, yes. Yeah, that was so. Exactly what it was. I don't think I'll pursue that.
Right.
Light that small candle. All right. We have three CDs and a cassette arrived from Erling Wold, and seems to be a kind of a clever sort. Funny words, as you point out from these. We just unwrapped these and began looking at them. Clever cover art, and he talks about himself having a minimalist moment.
Yes.
Anyway, but here's a little piece from a new CD called Music of Love. The composition is The Islamic Republic of Las Vegas.
Which is very lovely.
Yes. And this is the part three called The Dance of the Polygamists.
Oh, do play.
Music by Erling Wold, or Wold. Thank you. dance of the polygamists from the
polygamidiists,
polyrhythmigamists from Music of Love, the Islamic Republic of Las Vegas. Too many syllables in the wrong position for my mouth. The Islamic Republic of Las Vegas. Music by Erling Wold or Vold on Spooky Pooch CD number 166. I like Spooky Pooch.
And maybe we'll hear more later.
We shall. We will indeed have a little listen because we have a whole pile of them here. Nothing like having CDs. Don't want to waste them.
Right.
Got to at least play them.
Hard to recycle them. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's right. They don't recycle as good as vinyl did. Right? Oh, right. Now it's time for...
Station ID, WGDR, Plainfield, presenting now, Best of the Bizarre, Mark 21, listenable snippets from episodes 101 through 105 in a pleasurable listening snippetry format. This is the law.
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 Thank you. I guess you could have. You could. How old is that in dog's years? Yeah. My wife, my two kids, and a fear of the family car. What am I supposed to do? I've got a seventh. What should I do? Does it go up? Does it go down? What should I do? Gets louder. It's actually what it does technically. So there's some. I had which I think Hamos is the Hamos. Mm-hmm. You know that creates the form, and then we work out maybe sure. Oh, yeah, I think that's true. My lawyer is said to be cooperative, but not to give any answers. Sort of don't mean anything at all. But
the Babitron also required the Babalap laptop.
She was a visitor.
It's gonna rain!
You have it at the wrong speed. There you go.
We'll discuss it.
Thank you.
kind of critters?
John somebody?
It's not Datsun, but I guess it could be, yeah.
That is where you learn to drink.
Have you ever considered the Foreign Service?
And so that's where Martin's idea came from.
Of the dog.
Geez, good old fashioned grill.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Robert, tell us a story.
Fortunately, tiny pox is difficult to transmit. Skull of Mantovani.
Shlomo, meanwhile, fled to Lapland.
Notches cut in the corner of it. The big, and, you know.
Listening.
Die Nacht ist ein Muster aus Bogen.
Some are green.
La 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 la. That's a good one, isn't
it? Oh, never mind.
Oh, never mind indeed. Best of the Bazaar, Mark 21, presenting listenable snippets from episodes 101 through 105, including part of the Best of the Bazaar, Mark 20. So that may be incorporated into Best of the Bazaar 22.
It would have been interesting if you had considered the endless mirrors and have had used the first,
yes,
the second Best of the Bazaar,
right,
according from the first and on through, but, well, we can only be retrospective, can't we?
No, we can't.
Correct answer. And as a matter of fact, that's what we're exactly not going to be. So we have two brand newly composed pieces to play.
Oh, what fun.
The first is a birthday present. You want to tell that story?
And also one of the part-time contributors to the... The part-time contributors to the Calvos and Damien New Music Bazaar, Ask Aggie, Aggie Bardsong Smee, recently had her 60th birthal anniversary, for which she was granted a wish, and that wish was...
I thought you were going to say amnesty.
That was her wish. Amnesthesiology.
That's much more like it.
Anyway, instead, she got this piece called Going Like 60, here performed by the Greater MIDI Ensemble. Piece by, by me. Going Like 60, a Berthel anniversary piece for Aggie Birdsong Smee by David Gunn. And now...
And now, this next composition was done for an interesting monthly challenge that appears on the internet. A composer who goes by the name of Dear Mad does a website called La Musique Petite, and each month he issues a challenge of a subject to write a piece about, for, toward, thinking about, whatever. He had one for marches. He had one on the theme of love. Last month's challenge was repeating notes. Actually, I think he called it the repeating note. And each time it's very interesting because the contributions run from a low of four or five composers who write pieces for it to I think 13 marches were written for that particular challenge. This month's challenge is simply called Jetliner Symphony.
Does he himself write anything?
Yes. Oh, yes. He's quite a good composer, and we will have him on the show sometime next year.
Oh, good.
He's a lot of fun, and he's created a mailing list of composers, an electronic mailing list where people contribute to this site, and then among themselves make comments about each other's pieces. I'm quite honest and direct. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the latest month's postings, the first compositions have just gone up. There are now five on the site, and one of the pieces is one of the contributions by yours somewhat truly.
Somewhat?
And I thought, gosh, Jetliner Symphony, what could that possibly be about? What could one possibly think about? And I did, and it kind of kicked this one into operation, and I end up calling it, by combining Prelude and Jetliner, into Jetlude.
Jetlube,
I don't know. Jetlude. And since my MIDI card is in repair elsewhere, we are going to hear it played directly from the port of this little portable computer sitting here beside us. Here it is by Dennis Bathory Kits. Jetlude for Seven Winds. I don't hear anything. It was playing before. Do I have the wrong connector? Yes, I do have the wrong connector. We'll start this one again. Get the correct connector this time. Jetlude, trying again for the correct connector.
see, it's just taxiing down the runway. It wants to get going farther, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I got into writing it, and I got to the point where about 2.5 minutes had gone by, and that was kind of the postings on this particular site don't go more than 3 minutes. And I realized this is a very, very much longer piece. It could turn into a large-scale kind of, I don't know, impossible to play rhythmically. Anyway, Jet Lude. New compositions, boy, a whole bunch of them. And we have been giving some of our existing recordings here a little bit of the shorter of the shrifting lately, and I thought maybe we should catch up on some of that. And we have a wonderful piece called Portrait of the Quintet of the Americas by Pauline Oliveros. And yeah. I think we can give that a listen. This is on a CD called Quintet of the Americas Self-Portrait, music by Elliot Sharp, Christopher Culpo, Lee Hyla, Amy Rubin, and Pauline Oliveros. About 8 minutes, a rather interesting combination of instruments and in Pauline's unique way of organizing things in tapestries that seem to roll on endlessly. Music by Pauline Oliveros. Portrait of the Quintet of the Americas.
Thank you.
And music by Pauline Oliveros, the quintet for the Americas. That's a nice little piece. You know, we hear her with her just tuned.
Tuned recently, you mean?
Recently tuned and just intonation accordion, and sometimes forget that there are other guises in which we all geezers in which we all compose. So anyway, that's the Calvos and Damien New Music Bazaar for today. We'll put on something from the Bonk Festival as we make our way out today. We have a couple of different little pieces, but. What do you think? How about Panic by Drew Krause?
Oh, Panic is the one.
By Drew Krause. This is music from the Bonk Festival, which is held every year in Florida, I believe. And its director, Robert Constable, will be joining us on the show next spring, a year from now.
It's in Bonk, which is outside of Orlando.
Ah, Bonk. Yes, it is indeed. Here it is. Panic by Drew. He's using his middle name now, Drew Stafford Krause.
Man.
I know that happens to composers. What can I tell you?
A production of Multimedia.